Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to an emergency edition of Disloyal Idiots. The Troy Nunes is an Absolute Magician podcast for at least another couple of weeks. We have extremely breaking news. Well, not breaking anymore, but an emergency news that we had to get together for. As Jim Morrison once said, this is the end. James Arthur Boeheim, after 47 years, is no longer the head coach of Syracuse basketball. I am Steve Haller. With me, as always, Christian DeGuzman and Andy Pregler. I don't really know how to open this. That was the best I could do. Fire away, guys, because this is news.
I mean, the crazy part about everything that just happened here was that we started this afternoon about ready to tear Joe Girard to shreds and have a referendum on the last 2 years of Syracuse basketball under Jim Boeheim. And then what transpired is something that I can only call patently absurd, because it was so predictable and yet still so blindsiding.
In other words, Syracuse.
That's kind of that's kind of what I'm going for here. I mean, we legitimately had a press conference where Jim Boeheim was playing smart ass about whether or not he was going to retire or not.
I was going to say, you could have stopped that and it wouldn't have been surprising. And then the second half of that on whether he was retiring or not is what makes it very awkward, and where we are today, very awkward.
Yeah. So for those that did not watch what happened today, Syracuse played Wake Forest. They were down as much as 12 points at one point in time, I believe, and rallied back and had a chance to win it with about 7 seconds left on the clock, to which Joe Girard chucked up a contested shot. And the Wake Forest Demon Deacons hit a buzzer beater. Jim Boeheim walks into his press conference, and I have it pulled up here, goes in with a relatively somber attitude and talks a lot about how privileged he was to be the head coach at, or how privileged he is to be the head coach at Syracuse University. And, you know, this has all been quite a ride. And so then Donna DeTota, who obviously legend in the local reporting sphere, question, are you saying right now that you're going to retire? Jim Boeheim, this is up to the university. Question, you want to come back? Boeheim, I didn't say that. Question, so what are you saying? You're not saying you're retiring? Boeheim, I just said it. I don't know. Question, so you don't know? Boeheim, I said this is up to the university. Question, how will you make a determination about when you'll come back? Boeheim, you're talking to the wrong guy.
I don't know if there is a more Boeheim way that could have gone, but also it hurts to see a legend go out like this, but also, I don't know, There's too many. There's thoughts. There's emotions. There's all sorts of things going on right now.
So let's start with the thoughts before we get to the emotions, because I think the emotions, there's a lot of negative emotions that come out of the thoughts before we get to the positive stuff. I like the reality of that situation. Like, it's just, this is what happens when a legend stays too long. Right. And that's why we know we've been here. None of this should be a surprise. And yet somehow it is the most surprising thing ever. Syracuse announces that. So that press conference, I'm looking at a tweet that tweeted about this. The press conference comes out and then Syracuse releases a statement. I probably about an hour or two later, where the word retirement is never used. It says that today, as his 47th season coaching his alma mater comes to an end, so does his storied career at Syracuse University. Associate head coach Adrian Autry, one of Boeheim's former players and longtime assistants, has been named the program's next head coach. Christian, you have read a lot of soccer sackings. This is one of the most passive aggressive moving on statements that I have ever seen, to the point that I was pretty sure that at some point Man U or Chelsea had released a statement along these lines, moving on from one of their managers.
Well, the thing is, if this was a soccer statement, this would be two paragraphs consisting of no more than 200 words.
Yeah, sounds right.
And it might have even been one paragraph.
Yeah, I mean, the Chelsea approach is usually just name the new guy and don't even acknowledge the other guy's gone.
Yeah. but this definitely smelt of this was the university decision and not Boeheim's decision. I'm not sure how long it's been known / rumored, because Syracuse is a private university, so contract details really aren't announced, but it's been kind of known / rumored / known / who knows that Boeheim's been on like rolling 1-year contracts for the longest time. And so it was just going to always be someone was going to decide that he wasn't going to stick around. And in this case, it was the university's decision.
Well, and Jim was playing the ultimate game of chicken of like, yeah, hey, this isn't my decision. Even though we knew, like, for the, and
he,
again,
he called
to
their
the
bluff.
Right. And to the last day, he played coy. He's been for how long saying, you know, it's not up to me, it's up to the university, when we all knew for decades that it wasn't up to the university, it was up to him. And he hung on long enough that here we are, where it ended up being the university's decision instead of him being able to go out on his own terms.
Yep. And I think this brings me to something that Pete Thamel tweeted out. Sources, the timing of the announcement of Jim Boeheim not returning and Adrian Autry taking over wasn't set until today. Autry had long been the administrative choice to be Boeheim's successor, but the timing was not finalized until the Orange lost today. I think that says so much about the situation that we find ourselves in right now, because there have been rumors, things that I don't think anybody here is like 100% comfortable saying in a podcast setting, because we've all heard a bunch of things that have been unsubstantiated, but along the lines of, ever since the Boston College game quotes, things have not been well up on the hill when it comes to Jim Boeheim and it comes to his future here. And to me, it does feel odd that you'd wait until the last second to make this kind of decision. However, it's very likely that, how do I want to put this? If Boeheim is on a 1-year contract, getting the way that you're going to get him out of there is going to be when the contract expires. And the contract does not expire until the season is over. And the season ended today. And I think that's kind of where you're at. Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's been pretty obvious that Syracuse was not going to get any kind of postseason invitation from an NIT or the C CBI. Is that the that's the other one we don't want to talk about?
They would have only accepted an NIT. There's no way they would have accepted a CBI invitation.
Right, exactly. So the season was effectively over today. And so if Jim Boeheim is out of a contract, I guess the timing makes sense from that regard. But what I do think is perhaps, and I guess, Steve, this is something, again, Steve is old, check mark. Just you have dealt with this university longer than Christian and I have. It is not surprising to me that there was a contingency plan in place that was known by the uppermost people and not necessarily anybody else except for those who needed to be involved. And in this case, it was Boeheim and Autry and nobody else.
Yeah, and I mean, I would assume that Jerry may have known as well, because when you look back at what he said on Saturday, that seems a lot more like a farewell than it does a celebration. And it seemed weird at the time, but now it makes a lot more sense. I would assume he probably will not be retained on Red's staff and that he'll go find a coaching opportunity somewhere. Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing, like, I've... Jesus, the Steve is old thing. Christian, I think... let's see. I've apparently... I just did the math. Been following Syracuse basketball for 27 years. So that's definitively longer than you. and is that longer than you've been on the earth, I believe?
It depends on when you... It depends on the day. Because I turned 27 in May.
Okay, I got you slightly by like 3 months, because it would have been the 96 run that... the 96 tournament run. So, yes, technically, I've been a fan of Syracuse basketball longer than you've been alive, which is frightening. And Jim Boeheim has been the coach, all of that, and then some. So, yeah, I can't even think, even in all that time, of another decision that's been so, like, known but unknown. Well, actually, yeah, and they all involve Boeheim. The Hopkins coach in waiting thing. Any of that sort of all the mess surrounding that was, you know, that was a known unknown. Like nobody wanted to acknowledge that was a thing, but it was a thing. It's just been this whole tenure has been a weird since that era, since that whole thing went down. I guess since Mike Hopkins coached those 9 games.
Yes,
that was the turning point, the linchpin in the Syracuse basketball tenure. So I don't know. It's just it's all weird to think about anything or anyone but James Arthur Boeheim on the sidelines of Syracuse basketball. And yet here we are.
And I think, Steve, you hit on something that I kind of want to talk about with you guys a lot, like. The situation around Boeheim getting, Boeheim not returning to coach next year is there's still so much that's unknown. But what we do know is that Autry is going to be taking over. Red is going to be taking over as head coach. And I could not help but think about today, if Mike Hopkins doesn't coach those 9 games, are we looking at what we're looking at today? And I legitimately think in my heart of hearts, that he is the head coach today if he doesn't have to take over for that 9-game stretch. Because that stretch, I have never seen public opinion turn on somebody so quickly.
Yeah, and you and I were both writing for Nunes at the time. I think that was right before you popped on, right, Christian?
That was well before I popped on.
Really? How long's Hop been gone? See, now we're back to the Steve's old thing where I can't remember things. but yeah, I mean that if you know, let's stay on brand and go with the standard Marvel what if. Like yeah. if JB doesn't have to sit down for those games and Hop doesn't coach them, does the coach and waiting plan still go through? Does Hopkins never go to Washington? And is the succession plan still in place? And Hop's already been our coach for a couple of years at this point.
What season was that again? That was the 16-17 season, right?
I just wrote about this the other day. I'm pretty sure that was the 17-18 season, but I'm not. I'm double checking right now. Syracuse.
That was 2015-2016.
Okay, so you're all wrong.
So that was the miracle Final Four run.
Yep.
Which also, like let's put into context, like the Hopkins like stretch during that time as well. Like he probably could have avoided the Georgetown and St. John's losses. Same with the Miami loss and Clemson losses at those times, because I mean Miami and Clemson at those times weren't great. The other two losses he took there were Pitt and UNC, and that was when Pitt still had Jamie Dixon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And UNC is always going to be UNC, so it is a mixed bag for Hopkins. I think I was young and naive enough in terms of my Syracuse basketball knowledge to see that it wasn't a total disaster, because it's a tough situation to go into, especially for Hopkins during that time. And maybe this is also me speaking with rose-tinted glasses, because I think I still think he should have been given a shot.
Yeah, well,
I still think like at some point he should have been given a shot.
Right, because I mean, and I don't want to turn this into a Mike Hopkins podcast, but it wasn't UNC, it was Georgetown to Clemson. His first game got thrown at Georgetown, you know, 3 years out of the Big East, like still Georgetown as Georgetown, or the rivalry still being the rivalry. Then, you know, Colgate at St. John's, same kind of deal. Cornell, Montana State, Texas Southern, at Pitt, at Miami, home against Clemson, who the Clemson game he lost in overtime. I was with you when it happened, and I'm with you now that it wasn't a bad stretch per se.
And remember that Syracuse team wasn't particularly great.
No, I mean, that was barely a sneak into the tournament.
Yeah, barely got into the tournament.
So, either way, I guess the what if train is what it is.
I think an important part of that is the media narrative that came after Hop's run. It wasn't that necessarily Hop did poorly. The Georgetown game was definitively probably the worst game of that stretch, but it was the first game, so you can come up with an excuse for it.
Right.
It was that media story that came out afterwards about the 1201 practice and the Boeheim quotes about how he was watching at home and was screaming at the TV about how he would be doing things differently. And it was the classic Jim Boeheim, where you can love him for being honest, and I think that there was a lot of love over the honesty of, like, haha, he gets to be one of us now, who screams and yells at the basketball team coach and thinks that we could be doing better than the coach. But there's the very real sense of undermining your next coach in waiting, really ruining a lot of the respect, not just in the team, but around the team that he had with it. And again, like, the situation played out the way it was. I don't think you could have expected the situation to play out any differently because of who the people are. But the minute that played out and it became an option to ignore the plan.
Yep.
it was always, we were always going to ignore the plan. Jim Boeheim was always going to stay longer. And at that point, that decision leads us to today, because that was the day that Jim Boeheim became bigger than the university, became bigger than anything at Syracuse.
That was the day that he publicly became bigger, because he had been pulling the strings for a long time.
That's actually more accurate. Yes.
What also didn't help was honestly, which kind of also plays into this entire thing, was the AD transition, because I'm pretty sure it was Coyle who put in the retirement plan in place.
Yeah.
And then they switched to Wildhack. I think it also, and the plan immediately got axed once Wildhack got into position as AD, because I think Boeheim could really see, okay, now I've got my leverage to end it actually how I want to end it.
Yeah, and that's the Wildhack conversation is its own animal, and where that is and where the power lies and what's happened, you know. But I don't know. I guess do we want to keep going on this? Do we want to move on to Red? Do we want to? I know we're saving for after halftime. For anyone who's wondering why we're going the way we are, our waxing poetic about Boeheim, and legit, because the guy is a legend. The guy is he's meant so much to all of us that the back half of the pod will be all of the waxing poetic about him and, you know, whatnot. But like there's still a lot of other questions as to what happened and how Red ended up being the guy and why.
Have either of you guys read The Club? It's a book about the Premier League in the late 90s, once they reformed as the Premier League, and how it became what it is today.
Oh, I should.
I'm with you as well, Steve. I should.
Yeah.
I'll send you the link for it. The review on it was that it was Game of Thrones, but sports. And all I can think about in this situation is that this is some Game of Thrones-esque thing that we've been playing at since about 2014, which for all of us was when we directly stepped into the sphere of being in the quote-unquote media, and I use quote-unquote doing so much heavy lifting there. Right. But it's when all of us kind of started like getting into this space, and...
Well, no, technically, I did have a Syracuse blog in 2006, back in the day with Sean, and, you know, I was one of the OGs, and then I ran away for a long time.
Well, you came back.
Steve has had his Miami Heat moment.
Oh, God. Here we are.
Yeah, but this is, and I think, Steve, to your point about like we're not going to know things, like that's the deal here, is that this is a book's worth of content and context that we are trying to decipher now
in an hour.
Right. Yeah. Well, not just like in an hour, but like in a day. Like you go through Twitter right now and search Jim Boeheim, and the retrospectives are all very like in the moment, flash of the pan, waxing poetic, or tearing down the way that things went this year, when the reality is that this is the culmination of a 47-year process of a guy who built with some of the other legends of the sport, built arguably the greatest conference that the sport has ever seen, watched that conference fall apart, decides to be part of conference realignment, which was something that he had chastised, and then becomes not just the last man standing of the Big East, but becomes the last man standing of his entire generation. And I think that like something my wife said that I thought was really, like, really true. I cannot imagine being anywhere in one space for 55, 60 years, however long it was that Jim Boeheim has been at Syracuse. I cannot imagine having to go through what you've gone through in the last few years, where you probably know it's time, but you're not ready to step away yet. And then you have this situation unfold where for the first time in your entire career, you have to do something that you've never done before. And I just think it's really, again, to quote Sean Keeley, like, this was always how it was going to end.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the part that I find so fascinating, is that we've known that this is coming, and yet it still feels surprising. It still feels shocking. It still feels all of these things.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's literally 60 years since Boeheim set foot on the hill. And this is the Boeheim-iest ending we could have. I mean,
yeah,
for him to go out being a curmudgeon in a press conference, and then having to literally, I mean, you read the quote earlier, it's not my choice, it's up to the university, and then the university saying, here, hold my beer, and just being like, all right, Red's a coach. Like, that, how, you can't, as Ian Dark would have said, you cannot write a script like this. Slightly different context, but still fits. Like, that, what? How? Like, there's no way this should have ended like this, but also this is the only way this could have ended.
Yeah.
I think one of the other things that is so interesting about this entire situation is that we know that there's another shoe to drop. And that other shoe is James Arthur Boeheim talking on or off the record with somebody, with one of his friends at Delmonico's or over the phone.
Yeah, we're going to get the Joey's conversation coming down in a couple of months.
I mean, it sounds like Pete Thamel is going to be the one to get the exclusive here. But maybe it's Mike. Maybe it's Donna. Maybe he just goes on Dan Patrick tomorrow and does the tell-all. That is a name I have not thought of in
quite a while.
And it's so long that you even misquoted it. Bud Poliquin.
Poliquin, yes.
But my, yeah, God. You know, we'll be waxing poet about all the
imagine after all of this he talks to Andy Katz.
would we have to rename the pod then?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Because something will inevitably come from that conversation.
But this is the point. Like, this is the thing about him that is so infuriating and yet lovable. He is so predictable that we know this is going to happen. And yet he is so chaotic that we have no idea how it's actually going to unfold, which was this in a nutshell.
So what you're saying is Jim Boeheim is the perfect protagonist for a Clint Eastwood movie.
Jim Boeheim is Clint Eastwood.
I mean, there was an empty chair at one point in time in like 2015, 2016. So, you know, we really did have all the pieces there.
How many times is Jim Boeheim for the rest of his life going to revel sitting on the front porch of his house in Fayetteville and screaming at the youths to get off his lawn?
Yeah, that sounds right. Although now he can go to his Skinny Atlas to his Skinny Atlas retreat and not have to worry about it.
Incredible. The Skinny Atlas retreat, a whole 20 minutes away.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's about as far as Jim Boeheim will go outside of Syracuse. we just got to get Rick Pitino to ask him where his first vacation spot was and see if it's still Syracuse, New York.
Oh, don't make Jim Boeheim. He's getting like someone like Rick Pitino to like do the be all tell all interview.
I don't know if I could watch 40 minutes of Rick Pitino and Jim Boeheim talking in a room.
Oh God, make it stop.
Yeah. Well, you know what's not going to stop? Home field apparel.
There we go. We got there.
And if you didn't think we were going to sell out during a reflection on Jim Boeheim's career, my friends, you are sadly mistaken.
And you also know that this got pulled together really quick because none of us are wearing home field apparel right now.
I was going to say, now that Jim Boeheim is no longer the head coach at Syracuse men's basketball, maybe Connor should reach out to the Jim and Julie Boeheim Foundation and ask about making a t-shirt that is cozy and soft and made with the eco-sustainable dyes and materials that we can all wear, especially when you use the promo code NOONS, N-U-N-E-S, for 10% off your first order at Home Field Apparel. Quickest home field ad read ever, because...
tell them to make a Syracuse jacket because the Kansas State one they dropped today is really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We need the bomber jacket. We need. I mean, you know what? This is Jim Boeheim's next career. Home field model. Let's go. Come on. He's still like a pretty slim guy. Those shirts are made for some slimmers.
I'm not sure if Connor wants that or vehemently hates that idea.
Yes.
Listen, he got 87. Okay, that's not a, actually Boeheim might not do it because of 87. Let's be real here. Mm-hmm. But Jim Boeheim is no longer the head coach of Syracuse basketball. That falls to I forget if he was the assistant coach, if he was the associate coach. The answer is that a guy who has been waiting a very long time, Adrian Autry, is now the head coach. He has been involved with Syracuse for over, the press release says, over 30 years. I never saw him play basketball.
I mean, he played from 90 to 94. That was actually slightly before me. We got to go to Kevin for that one.
Yeah, so I can't really talk about, like, him as a player. I just know him as a recruiter and coach. And, you know, the press release calls out Jeremy Grant, Tyler Ennis, O'Shea Brissett, Tyler Lydon, Chris McCullough exclusively as like his, you know, the ones that he worked the closest with. Those are some pretty good players. The recruiting aspect of this definitely changes face because, yeah, Autry is now the face of the program and not Jim Boeheim. And there's a lot of work to be done with this roster for next year.
Yeah. Well, you also know there it's not as up in the air as to is Jim going to go? Is Jim not going to go? And now, you know, high school kids may want to commit to a coach who is known to going to be there, assuming, you know, things go well. Also, random soccer fact, soccer tie-in. Take a wild stab at where Red Autry played professionally in 1995.
If it's soccer related, you're going to go like Augsburg or something, right?
No, in the Turkish league, he played for Beşiktaş.
Ah, Beşiktaş.
Yep. So, yeah.
Neat.
And the Brooklyn Kings, apparently, at one point. Didn't know that was a thing.
It's like when Tyler Ennis was in the Turkish league, played for Fenerbahçe.
Yeah.
It's definitely weird. I think that we'll wait to do the Adrian Autry, what situation is he stepping into pod until Sunday. That sounds like a great way to kill 30 minutes.
Yeah, easy.
So with the last 20 minutes or so, Jim Boeheim is no longer the head coach of Syracuse basketball. And I don't know if you guys have kind of experienced this today since the news broke, but like I'm walking up and down my hallway. Like I have a piece of the Carrier Dome roof framed in my hallway. I have a piece of the 03 court signed by Boeheim in our window. I've got a sign that says like home sweet dome hanging up in our living room. Like there's just like all these reminders of Cuse are everywhere in my life as we watch Steve. If you're watching on Twitch, you're going to see. Yeah, there it is.
That's a signature right there.
You didn't get a signature on a dome tin? Steve, come on, missed opportunity.
No, I've still got like three in my basement, though. And I have a signed basketball from the 03 team over there. Like, there's Jim Boeheim is everywhere around this room.
And I think that this is like the biggest thing is that for so long, it was such a given that Jim Boeheim would be there. And now he's not. And now looking at these reminders of Syracuse, it does feel like a piece of all of us has kind of moved on. In a way that like is natural when you think about a college or a university that you went to or that represents a time in your life that was in the past. And now it just feels so much more real. And at least for me, I interacted with Jim Boeheim once directly when I ran into him in Manly. Literally, I opened a door, wasn't looking where I was going, and ran into him. And then every other instance, I was on the team plane as the mascot and just like watching the team live their life in the context of an NCAA tournament situation. So I don't have any good Jim Boeheim stories. I just have the thing of, when you think of Syracuse, you think of Jim Boeheim. When you meet somebody who knows Syracuse, they ask you about the basketball team because of Jim Boeheim.
Yeah.
Living in New York City, when I am wearing a vintage home field apparel shirt or my Scripps Syracuse hat, if somebody's talking to me, they're talking to me about the 80s Big East. And Jim Boeheim is the definition for Syracuse of that. And I don't, there's, like, that is what Syracuse is to so many people throughout the country. And Jim Boeheim is the reason that that is the case.
Yeah. He's ubiquitous with the program. Like, he's been here. It's the old, you know, he comes with the Carrier Dome. But now we're looking at the backside of it. And it's like, I mean, as long as I've ever known anything Syracuse related, it's been tied to James Arthur Boeheim, and like his name's on the goddamn court. Like, it's not like this is just a flash in the pan coach. Like, he's been there 60 years. His name's on the court. He's been there for the ups and downs, mostly ups. The downs have only been recently. Like, he's the second winningest coach of all time. He's got 1,100 plus wins. Yes, I'm going to quote that number. It's like, it's always been, he's this crazy curmudgeon, but he's our curmudgeon. And now, like, even on the way out, he was our curmudgeon. But, like, yeah, I don't know. It's such a complicated legacy.
It's weird for me because I never... So, my Syracuse upbringing is weird. I never really followed sports, especially college sports and Syracuse sports, until I, you know, got into Syracuse. For those who don't know, my background was theater. I was always a theater kid growing up, and so I spent a lot of my free time just focusing on that. And then I just watched sports on the side because it was something else I liked. And so, really, my first knowledge of college sports and college basketball in turn never came until when I committed I got into Syracuse in 2013. That happened to be a good year to start focusing on Syracuse basketball. All the way up until throwback BC uniforms happened.
I was going to say, we're quoting, since I started the song or the pods quoting songs, like Newfound Glory said, it's all downhill from here at one point. And, you kind of hit that one.
it was really all downhill after my first year of focusing on Syracuse basketball.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I forgot that's how that transition worked.
Mm-hmm. So it is weird because, like, once I've only really studied Syracuse basketball with knowing Jim Boeheim when he was always playing the 2-3 zone, when I was still learning about, you know, the legend of Jim Boeheim and stuff like that.
Yeah, were you really confused when you went back and watched that 0-3 tape of the title game? It's like, hold on, they're not playing zone. What's going on?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Because what was it, 09 when he started playing exclusively zone?
Something around there, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, that was, like, a concept that I didn't understand for 2 years as well. I just knew that Syracuse played zone.
Right.
And, So that's my weird relationship with Jim Boeheim and Syracuse sports just in general, is that, you know, I'm one of those recent fans who didn't know about the glories of Syracuse Georgetown.
Right.
I'm one of the Syracuse fans who didn't understand how important the Big East was until I got on the campus and started hearing it from the rest of the people who live that.
Right. Well, so, it's funny. Even me, who I've been watching Cuse basketball since 96, like, I still, like, that the John Wallace team was the one that got me into enjoying Syracuse basketball. And,
like, what will be really fun is this story. I've said it before. I've only been to, like, 3-4 games as a fan. At Syracuse, I've been to every other one as a media member. And it's weird for me, being one of the football writers on this website, for me to go to my first ever football game, which, as many of you know, was the Nova game in 2014. And I distinctly remember asking one of my hall mates, who I went to the game with for that first game, who happened to be from Syracuse, and asking him, so who's the quarterback on this team? So, like, but so, like, that knowledge, that what I'm getting at this point is, like, Syracuse sports knowledge doesn't always transcend students. But one of the few things I did know when I first started following Syracuse is one of the first things I knew about Syracuse was, this is Jim Boeheim's school. The program is Jim. The program is known for Jim Boeheim. Kind of like in the same way when I, you know, got more into college basketball, the first things I knew about college basketball was the Tobacco Road rivalry and Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski.
Yep.
That's when I first started following casually college basketball, maybe 4 or 5 years before I got into Syracuse. But then once I got into Syracuse, I knew Jim Boeheim. This is Jim Boeheim's program. And that's the association, the strong association that Boeheim had with Syracuse. And I think that's one of the things that's going to be sorely missed, is that program identification to people who are new to the program and new to the sport.
Yeah, it's, and we've seen other programs go through it at this point too. And it's not easy. I mean, it's going to be, we're not in for a, I mean, hell, we may be, but if I was a betting man, we're not in for a smooth transition and everything being peachy keen and, you know, us going back to, you know, winning games left and right next year. I mean, we're in, well, sorry, Christian, we're in post Sir Alex Ferguson Manchester United mode right now.
Oh, God.
Of, like,
post Arsene Wenger Arsenal mode.
Yeah.
Post Arsene Wenger mode right now is turning out to be pretty okay.
But it took a good couple of years.
I think that that's, like, the point, is that you had Unai Emery there, who ended up being a great manager.
Yeah.
But he followed a legend, and it was never going to work.
Oh, David Moyes at United. Same deal. Mm-hmm. Like, solid manager at Everton, goes to United, completely out of his element, doesn't work out. Here we are.
Was holding his own last year just fine. I think this conversation actually made me look up the Mark Titus Ringer article about Jim Boeheim, which, if you haven't read it, is from 2017, when Jim Boeheim was 73 years old. Sorry, these things just blow my mind as I reread this. But if you haven't read it, we'll link it in the show notes and in the article on Noons. But, like, he hits the nail on the head. I'm just going to read this. I'm just going to read this quote real quick. All of this is a roundabout way of saying that now feels like a good time to start trying to parse Jim Boeheim's legacy. Again, hilarious. Because while he's one of the most fascinating figures the sport has ever seen, he's also nearly impossible to pin down. If I'm oversimplifying things, but it feels like all of the other all-time coaching greats have distinct identities. All these, and then he goes off and leads the different, he reads off about a bunch of different things and says, if you asked 50 different fans to describe Jim Boeheim in a single sentence, you would get 50 different answers. All these assessments are fair, but none alone come close to capturing Boeheim's essence. And I think what we've seen in the last 3 years is those 50 different opinions kind of coalesce around the worst aspects of Jim Boeheim: the whiner, the stubborn, the refusal to adapt and change the guy who you feel like is bullshitting you at every turn. Those used to just be aspects of his identity. Those became his identity the last few years. But for most of his time at Syracuse, Boeheim was a little bit of everything. And I think that worked, to Christian, to your point, of like transcending a student consciousness where it didn't really matter what kind of person you were and what your relationship to Syracuse was. There was this Jim Boeheim figure who could be a little bit of whatever you needed him to be in that moment. I think that's also like what worked really well with the teams that he had. Like the hearing the 2003 team talk about Boeheim and the way that Melo talked about him versus the way that a guy like Warwick or a guy like Jerry talks about him. Like you would think that they were talking about different coaches, different people. But it's just that this guy contains multitudes. And at his peak, he could be whatever you needed him to be to get the best out of that situation. And I do think that that is something that is going to take some time for us to kind of remember about him, but is probably one of the most endearing qualities about Boeheim. And I just remembered that in that article, it literally has a description of Jim Boeheim as the guy who can't stop picking his nose. And
yeah,
I went almost 53 minutes without bringing that up.
Things can be two things, Andy.
Did you see the video that your fellow auto Jeff Kirkchin posted on Twitter?
I can't say that I did.
He lowered his Syracuse flag at half mast while whistling the alma mater, saluted it, and then at the end picked his nose on the camera.
That is, yeah, that tracks.
That's like the perfect encapsulating way to honor the Syracuse retirement ceremony.
Yeah, like does the city of Syracuse like fly their flags at half mast at this point tomorrow? Because it's the end of an era. I mean, take it for what you will. Christian, you were waxing poetic about how you got into Cuse basketball. Back in 96, like, it was the post-real, quote-unquote, real Big East. And I had gotten in on the heels of that run. And it was, you know, Boeheim, even then, was he was a fiery whatever the hell Jim is. And he back then, he was evolving with the teams that he had. Those Wallace teams weren't the same as what we saw with, you know, Jason Hart and Ryan Blackwell and that whole crew. And they weren't, and Tom Thomas, and they weren't the same as what we saw with, you know, Heck and Mack and Mello. And like these squads kept evolving. And now here we are where he got stuck in, you know, mired in doing whatever he's been doing these last couple of years, where we're seeing as much as we were. And it's, I don't know how to, I guess I still can't parse what the hell we just saw or lived through or experienced these last couple of years. It really is surreal for any of us that have been following way too closely, like the three of us tend to.
I am just like, I think we should really round this out by just like, favorite Syracuse basketball memory with Jim and what Jim Boeheim played a role in that for, because for me, I remember the Final Four run my junior year. That was the Montana and Cal year, in the first round, the year that Cal could not get back into this. But that was
your Christ, that was George. Your freshman year?
No, that was my junior year.
Okay.
I was 21. Not helping a whole lot, but helping a little bit.
No. I was watching that at a fucking bachelor party in Vermont.
That was the year I took a tour of Syracuse for the first time.
Oh God.
Wow. Okay.
I didn't think this was gonna be the pod that hammered holding the Steve is old.
We're talking about a guy who's been at Syracuse's campus for like 50 plus years. Of course that was going to be the case.
Fair.
But yeah, there's, I just remember that there was the game that they beat, who did they beat? They beat somebody in the final or in the Elite Michigan? Eight.
No, Michigan's the team they lost to in the Final Four.
Yeah.
No,
to
no.
get to in DC on Georgetown's court.
Yeah.
Forget what it is, but I remember that my ex-roommate was the auto for that game and just hugged Rakeem Christmas. And I remember him coming back on the team flight and everybody being so excited. And I think one of the enduring things about Jim Boeheim is that he never really knew what to do when they won a big game. Like, he always like was very clearly happy, but didn't quite know how to celebrate slash felt uncomfortable celebrating. And he just had that goofy little grin that he has when he doesn't really know what else to do. And he kind of does like the awkward wave with the limp wrist. And the, just
yeah, like a celebration in 2003.
I was gonna say, for me, it was him with the hat in 2003. 100%. Like, when you think of the happiest you ever saw Jim Boeheim, that was it. It was awkward. It was really weird, but he was really happy, and he had an awesome hat on.
We need to have a national orange cowboy hat day in honor of James Arthur.
Not the dog.
not the dog.
How does that work out for Casillo?
I mean, it's a good name for 47 years. After 47, then you gotta reevaluate.
Fair enough.
Wow. Guys, I never thought that we'd do this pod. I mean that very seriously.
Yeah.
This like very much felt like a surreal day that would come down the pipeline.
I didn't think we would do it in this fashion.
That is also true.
Right. You know, it's you know Boeheim didn't want the farewell tour or whatever. But also, like, I didn't think it would be an emergency. I think there would be some forewarning.
I think we all did, and somehow there wasn't.
Yeah.
Somehow there wasn't.
I also think that right now is a testament to the only thing that can make the three of us remotely speechless is the fact that we're sitting here having to talk about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is going to be a weird week. This weekend show, the Sunday night show, is going to be exciting and weird, new frontiers for everybody. But I think we'll have a lot more context by then on what happened today. We'll probably have some more great Boeheim stories coming out from people. But gentlemen, the Disloyal Idiots podcast has outsurvived Jim Boeheim.
Yes, I was about to say that. I knew where that was going.
You know, two weeks in, we've made it.
We officially made it.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Technically, the Trainings is an Absolute Magician podcast also did.
Yes.
That was barely by the skin of its team.
Oh, God.
Are we sure this wasn't just a big five-head play from Vox?
Just looking for those extra hits on the way out.
Oh, they knew one of their members is on the board of trustees or something. Oh man, just absolutely wild, and I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been the emergency episode of the Disloyal Idiots podcast, the Troy Nunes Magician is an absolute magician podcast for now. Thank you so much for listening. If you tuned in live on Twitch, we really appreciate it. If you were listening to this on your podcast provider of choice, make sure you like and subscribe. Helps us trick the AI into expanding the Ottoman Empire, and will also help you when we officially switch our feed name and logos and all these things. Make sure that you stay up to date with everything that we've got going on. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. Make sure you share some of your favorite Jim Boeheim memories. I think that this is going to be an opportunity for all of us as a community to kind of come together over some positive memories. And again, thank you for tuning into this emergency edition. It feels weird to say, but we sign off the same way every time. But go Orange.
Go Orange.
Go Orange.